My name is Domenica Persanti, and I am the project director for the WISH program, which is the program that we are going to talk a little bit about today. The presentation is on decreasing injection drug use among sex workers and criminal justice involved women. Dr. Stever, who is to my right, is the evaluator for our program and my amazing mentor as well. So first, we want to disclose that we have no relationships to disclose, and that the program is funded by the Office of Women's Health, or OWH. We were awarded the grant for this program in 2011, and we started to collect data in 2012. The WISH program basically has three components. It's care advocacy, we have an outreach component as well, and all the services are trauma-informed. So they're all provided in a within a trauma-informed approach. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the study design, the results, and obviously we'll have time for a few questions if you all have them. So the purpose of the program originally was to expand and enhance access to medical and behavioral health care services for women who we call in the life, so women who self-report as sex workers. We also work with our hospital and local health care providers to teach them how to communicate with women about how they can get information from them that they need, which will help their medical care. A lot of people, kind of like you had mentioned with your question, have a lot of questions around how to talk to our women and what's appropriate and what's not and how not to scare them away. So we do a lot of education and awareness in our community around that as well. And if I didn't mention it, we're from Delaware. Most people ask what state that's in. The program actually operates, we have three counties. The program operates in one county, it's Newcastle County, primarily in the city of Wilmington, which is our largest city in Delaware. So the program also provides community supports for women who engage in sex work. So we have multiple partners. We are the lead agency for the grant, but one of the requirements of the grant was that we partnered with three grassroots organizations that had smaller operating budgets than ours. So we have multiple community partners, which is a blessing and a curse altogether. The program also utilizes a gender transformative approach, so we try to empower women. We teach them to recognize and identify their strengths and their needs. We talk to them about advocacy. We do a campaign every year called Know Your Rights, where we have the women come in and we talk to them about what their rights are and how they can advocate for themselves in a responsible manner when they are approached by the police or other, you know, entities which they might view as the enemy of sorts. We educate them on gender norms, and the goal is to help them value the contributions that they bring to our community, because they do contribute in positive ways to our community as well, and not everyone always recognizes that. So our population of focus, originally our population of focus started and is women who engage in prostitution or other behaviors that place them at risk of HIV and also who are HIV positive. There's a special emphasis placed on reaching women of color, especially African American women. We've expanded that population a little bit now to include anyone who identifies as female and or a sex worker, because what we recognized was that when we were doing street outreach, there were multiple males that would come up and say, hey, can you help? And we would obviously never say no to anyone. So we like to include them in our programming now as well. And while a lot of the work that we do is focused around women, anyone who identifies as a sex worker or as a woman, we will provide services to. So the program offers, we utilize evidence-based practices to enhance outreach to the at-risk population. We use motivational interviewing. We use strength-based case management, just to name a few. Counseling and testing for our HIV programs. We use a Safe in the City evidence-based practice for our HIV testing program as well. And we expand services to facilitate access to health and behavioral health care needs that meet the unique needs of this population. So that includes transportation. That includes meeting them at the ER at 2 a.m. if they call us and they say that they've experienced a sexual assault. It includes the Wilmington Police Department and Newcastle County Police calling us and saying, we have a woman here who we think would benefit from your services. And at times 4 in the morning and 9 at night, and anytime they need us, basically we have care advocates and outreach workers that will meet them wherever they are in the community to make sure that they're linked to our program. The program addresses the population of focus most critical health care issues. One of the things that we identified very early on is we would be out doing outreach, and we would have women who would come to us that needed wound care. or they may, you know, they have an abscess that we would know needed to be seen by the ER, but they were petrified to go into the ER because they were afraid of how they would be treated or judged once there. So shortly into the program, we added a nurse to the program and our outreach so that we would have an RN that was out there to provide some of the services that our caseworkers and our care advocates weren't trained or able to provide. So we addressed the gender disparities in healthcare and then reduced the public health harm associated with undiagnosed and untreated HIV and STIs. We've also expanded to provide naloxone access to these women, so we do a lot of overdose prevention on individual one-to-one basis. We provide them with the Evzio medication, which is the auto-injector, so that way they don't have to learn how to put the intranasal medication together. They have the auto-injecting device. We provide that. It's all free of charge, and then we also offer it to any of their loved ones, so they can have their husband, wife, mother, brother, kids come and get trained so that anyone around them also has access to the medication to save them in the event that there's an opiate overdose. So again, the program includes peer outreach. It includes care advocacy, which is our version of case management. We call it care advocacy because we like to stress to the women that that's our goal. It's not to case manage them, it's to take care of them and to help them get to a point where they're able to believe that they can accomplish some things on their own and get well. Trauma-specific treatment and care. Everything, like I said, everything that we do is under a trauma-informed care model. We've created some policies. We've also been responsible for enhancing some of the policies in our community with our healthcare providers and such around trauma-informed practices. So our outreach staff are recruited from the actual target population. So they're women that have lived experience. They're often women that are women in the program know, recognize, identify, so that they are immediately trustworthy to the women that we serve. They're relatable. The women can identify with them, so that helps to get the women into the program. We use the, under the community-based outreach program, we like to, we do brief risk reduction education. We always try to create a welcoming environment as best as we can. We do HIV testing, access to STI testing. We provide services based on the need of the target population, which includes daylight, twilight, and we constantly readjust our outreach sites and hours based on kind of what's going on in our neighborhood, because what happens normally is when the police recognize our women in a certain neighborhood, then they tend to hang out there and then our women move. So we're constantly kind of following them around and creating new sites. Last year we had 11 sexual assaults that happened within a period of about 3 months. So we changed our hours from 5 to 8, and we started going out 9 to midnight. So that way we were keeping in touch with our women. We were making sure that they were as safe as we could possibly make them. We bought whistles for them that when you pulled apart, they made a really loud noise, and we made sure we got them. We distributed them to, it was almost 1,100 people total in our outreach program to make sure that whoever this person that was never caught, that if they were approached any of our women, they would at least have a fighting chance. Our outreach contacts, they range from one-on-one street interactions to presentations about community resources and healthy behaviors. So we do health fairs. We go into the schools and do education. We do education at the high school level at this point. Anytime that we have an audience that is willing to listen to us, whether it's one person or 300 people, we like to get the information out there so that the partners in the community always have a resource to refer our women to. We also provide condoms, provider lists, we do bus passes, we do first aid, basic first aid and hygiene, wound care, like I said, naloxone as well, and then we do incentives for the women in addition to all of that. We also recruit women to participate in the study. We connect them to the case management care advocacy program throughout. So the care advocacy program, it's time limited. We usually run that about 3 to 4 months. It's based on the belief that clients have the inner strength to develop the necessary resources to cope with life circumstances once they're given the opportunity to do that. It provides increased support, planning, monitoring, assessment, and advocacy. What that looks like at a program level is our care advocates go to court with our women. They will go through any and all court processes. So if they're working through child support, if they're working through charges that they've obtained, anything like that, our case managers and our outreach workers will sit with them through the whole process. And we've established a relationship with a good amount of our courts. So it's helpful for us because we're able to advocate better because the justice system knows who we are now and they know that we don't go away. and that we're going to hang with the women until they're through the process. And like I said, we use the strengths-based case management approach. Our women are all screened for trauma at intake. We offer individual and group sessions by one of our community partners. The group sessions are held at the Women's Resource Center, which was another thing that we created 2.5 years through the grant. We realized that there was women who needed additional services like laundry, showers, things like that. So we have a drop-in center, and what we did was we closed that off to all other participants, and it's strictly for women to use from certain time periods, so that way they have a safe environment where they don't feel intimidated and they can come in and do laundry and they can use the computers to search for jobs and they have access to case managers and things like that. And then we have an advocacy program, that's the Know Your Rights campaign that we do, and that offers some legal information and things like that for the women. One of the other initiatives that we added once we realized they needed a little bit more than what we were offering from the street outreach approach was we call it our WAM Wednesdays. So we do this on the third Wednesday of each month. This is a fun little flyer that our women helped to create. They said superheroes are how they want to identify, and they thought it would capture other people's attention. So they helped us, and then we kind of put it together and produce this for them. And what happens is every month we have a different woman who works in the community that has accomplished something that we consider to be great, and that person will come in and talk to our women and share their story and try and empower them. We also do their nails. We do childcare for their kids. We feed them real dinner, so we don't order like Domino's. We actually set some funds aside to actually do like real food for them that's healthy. We do nutrition. Sometimes our people come in and cook with them so they can learn how to cook and learn how to meal plan and things like that. So that was one of the other things that we added along with our resource center. So these are all some of the things that our women get. There's some of the basic things that they get as well as the therapeutic services. And I'm going to pass the microphone to Dr. Stieber because when we get into data and study, that's her part. Okay.
I imagine you figured out by now this is a harm reduction program. Nobody does not get services. It's not like, well, if you don't do A, B, C, and D, you're off the list. So it is an ongoing, very powerful sort of program. So this is a quasi-experimental comparison group study, which did not start out that way, but almost a year in, our grantee, the Office of Women's Health, said, now we want a comparison group. So you know how that goes. You're scrambling around trying to do that. So we have a comparison group I'll describe a little bit later. And most of the women were receiving substance abuse treatment at Brandywine Counseling at the time. That was the first group because we needed a sample and we needed to find women who were similar to them. So they were almost everybody in the program was recruited through outreach, although we did have referrals from others, including the courts. They created a specialized court called the Trauma-Informed Probation, or TIP, that was designed by the commissioner. In Delaware, they have a system, but anyway, a county commissioner is actually can be a judge, and she wanted to do something very specific, almost like a treatment court judge, you know, that would be what the program was. So, and that has had unusual effects. So this is our population. I would say the one thing that we did, this is women in the intervention, we were not as successful initially at recruiting women of color to the degree that we wanted. That was the highest rates of HIV in Delaware are among women of color. So we have, it's sort of like an ongoing issue to recruit that population. We're very similar in our comparison group, with the exception of we have actually more African-American women in this study than we have in our other one. But the ages are pretty much the same. We have some more Hispanic Latinas in this particular group. When you look at pregnancy, so we had 485 women in the program, and 403 of them had children. So now you look at a group of sex workers who are also moving around the community, many with their children in tow. So we had really a high-risk situation. Comparison group, once again, you see 84.6% of them had children. And these were women similar to our women, but they were actually receiving some other type of treatment. We did a variety of instruments that we looked at. This was not, for those of you familiar with SAMHSA, this was not a SAMHSA grant, so they didn't have a standard instrument. There were actually 10 studies funded by the Office of Women's Health, really to improve women's health. That was what it was all about. So they're very, very varied. One of them is just for intimate partner violence. One of them is reaching out to women who are overweight in inner cities in Baltimore and doing things like that. So we have a lot of measures. So we looked at injection drug use, because this was a group high in injection drug use, and compared to their comparison group, we had significant decreases in that, and there was no statistical change of drug use from the in our comparison group. So we had alcohol use was not significant decrease. Once again, this is a harm reduction versus a total abstinence, but we had you can see the means went down from time one to time two. Both groups had statistically significant decreases in illegal drug use, but our group still did really well. The only thing that we had, which we discussed at our last meeting, was our women in the intervention group increased their smoking rate. So part of it is we think that because they're reducing other things, they're picking up other things as things go by. So we have to look at that a little bit more. Independent sample t-test showed no statistical significant difference in means for unprotected sexual contact, but the mean for unprotected sexual contact increased in the comparison group. So these are women in treatment receiving all sorts of services compared to our women who are actually out on the street. Unprotected sexual, well, you can see what the numbers are there. Mental health outcomes. What I didn't report, which I should have, is I would say that probably 87% of our women come in, they're all screened for mental health, they're all positive. They all have some issues going along with them, primarily depression and anxiety. So what we've seen in our, looking at the comparison group, the women in our study who are receiving all of these enhanced services had significant decreases in both depression and anxiety compared to our comparison group. Protective factors. We've improved living in the community. A lot of the women came with no homes, living in cars. Trying to get a home, a roof over your head in Delaware is a terrible thing. It is just dreadful. They have a horrible system there. I'm sorry, it is a horrible system. You can only get it if you have to call a number and then they have to call you back, but the women don't have phones. So that seems to be the woman's problem, not the system's problem. But anyway, we've managed to increase living in the community, employment, knowing the results of your HIV test, positive interactions with friends and family. So on protective factors, there were no improvements among the comparison group. One of our big goals was to get women health insurance and get them access to health care, since it was the Office of Women's Health who was interested in that. And we certainly had that. We had significant increases in that. And let's see. Emergency room. The other thing, too, is trying to get the women out of the emergency room into a primary care office. And that was the program added a nurse, which you know is not cheap. And part of it was the nurse worked, one, to educate the healthcare system as well as the clients how to access services appropriately. No change in our comparison group. So the discussion is that a constellation of services were needed. This is a program that started with what we thought was a really tight model, and every year we had to enhance the model because the women needed more than we initially thought. And coming together, we had, it started with, the actual thing was the Delaware Coalition on Health and Justice. So it was the legal side and the health side came together to write this grant to try to work together. So, because almost all of the women are criminal justice involved, even if they're just buying and selling illegal drugs, they're in that system. The community systems had to work together. Community awareness was needed to reduce utilization barriers for high-risk women, and that is ongoing. It is just ongoing. And then when you add children into the mix, it makes it even more challenging, because oftentimes women are afraid to ask for help because they're afraid their children will be taken away from them. Okay, so we've had successful outcomes, and I wanted to put this on because this, I think you can all download this. There's a documentary on this program, and if you click on this link, if you download the PowerPoint and click on the link, it's really a very powerful program, a documentary that was prepared about the program, so that shows the outreach workers out on the street working with clients.
It's only about 17 minutes, so it's pretty short and brief.
And the other thing is, we from our treatment population have recruited outreach workers who are now working for the program. So it's a very indigenous kind of program with took a lot of time to build trust and respect, but it's been great.